Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR, Sirius XM Channel 141, 96.3 HD2 and 98.3 FM. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elridge, and we have a lot on the table. A brutal Democratic primary and recount, youth crime in the region, rent control, and so much more. He is on the line right now, and if you have comments or questions for the county executive, give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Mr. County Executive, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Thank you for asking. I appreciate it. And I hope you're doing well. I want to first jump into a bit of politics first. Obviously, the big news affecting you and the voters of the county right now is that you've won the primary. But as I said, it was skin of the teeth in your win. 32 votes defeating David Blair in a county that is as large as Montgomery County. It doesn't get any closer than that. To what do you attribute that?
I was a publicly financed candidate. And so that meant I was, I got matching funds, and about the maximum money I could raise was about $1 million. David Blair spent himself over $6 million, and he had a couple of PACs that easily probably added another couple of $1 million to this mix. So, one of the problems with running a campaign is with limited funds, you do, I did a TV ad, I did my mailers. In the last 2 weeks, Blair saturated the airwaves with incredibly negative ads, particularly out of the PACs that were supporting him. And I had no way of responding, literally no way of responding. There is no news around here. The Post doesn't cover local news to any great extent. And so when the ads went up, I could not get on TV, and there was no other effective way of getting a message out. And the ads were, incredibly negative. I didn't actually recognize myself from the ads. But, if somebody says something, you're not able to rebut it. It stays out there. So it's really hard to run that way. I mean, I'm a big believer in public financing, but we've got to think about how you have an electoral system that includes public financing but doesn't allow people effectively to try to buy an election and let them get around having to actually tell the truth about what they're saying. There's this weird FCC rule where, they can require truth in advertising, oddly enough, in anything except politics. And then you're explicitly allowed to lie in political ads, and there's no consequences for it. So it was tough getting there, but at the same time, we got there. I won by 77 last time. I won by 32 this time. My vote total went up over 15,000 compared to last time. I won with 30% of the vote last time. This time I had 40% of the vote. So in some ways we did better, but it's hard running against that much money.
Do you really? Well, let me ask you about that, and maybe this question is coming from someone. I mean, I don't vote in Montgomery County, but it comes from someone who votes, who is interested in the process. And maybe I'm just not like Joe or Jane voter in Montgomery County, but you are no stranger to the voters. You were and still are an incumbent. People know who you are, and while you may not have had the kind of advertising that Blair had, you're still on television. Even if the campaigns are not covered, the news is covered, and one could argue that you were on television and in print and online quite a bit.
I would say I'm not on television very much. If I get lucky, I get an interview with, Fox, for like 5 minutes, but it's not like a free-ranging interview. They have a set of questions, you answer them in 5 minutes and you're gone. And, I wasn't on television broadcast into people's housing. Montgomery Cable TV ran Let Us Each Run, I think, 1 3- or 4-minute ad. I do a weekly newsletter, but I don't talk politics in the newsletter.
Well, that's what I mean. Not about politics. I'm just talking about newsworthy events and as it relates to anything that comes up, whether it has to do with school or public safety or other issues. You are still the county executive.
County executive, that's right. But if somebody puts out ads, one of my friends said they saw six ads from Blair and his allies in a half-hour morning TV show. If the ads say, I blocked affordable housing projects, which I've never done, or that I've stopped development in Montgomery County, which I've never done, or one of my other opponents said, accused me of closing the schools, which was not my decision. People say things, and there are, plenty of voters out there, I will say, who I think were upset about some of the things we did during dealing with COVID. I know that. I know most Montgomery County residents are happy, but in the primary, you draw out motivated people, and people tend to be more motivated when you trigger negative feelings than by doing positive messaging.
Mm-hmm.
And being unable to answer accusations is really hard because, in a fair world, you'd want to hear what somebody else had to say. But the way things are skewed right now, you can say it and nobody else gets to, somebody can say something, you don't get to rebut it. And silence can be taken as you can't defend yourself or you can't explain yourself. Trust me, this bothered me that I couldn't get responses out to things because, if I thought I opposed affordable housing, first of all, it wouldn't be me. I'd have a hard time voting for me if I opposed affordable housing. So it's those kind of things I think kind of twist it in a way that's, more difficult than most people think.
Okay. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking to Mark Elrich, the Montgomery County Executive. We're talking all things Montgomery County tonight. If you have any comments, if you have any questions for the County Executive, lines are open at 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. I want to quickly ask you about your general election opponent, the Republican nominee Reardon Sullivan. Is this because Montgomery County has typically elected Democrats that I hate to say it, this isn't going to be a slam dunk, but how are you going to in these last couple of months? How are you going to face him? And even if you win, do you believe that a Republican contender could put a dent in the Democratic armor in the county?
I don't really think so. I mean, the county's pretty solidly Democratic, and he's still a Republican. And so things like, and he's accusing the school system of doing CRT. Mm. Other than the fact that the school system isn't doing CRT, I don't actually disagree with the basic fundamentals of what CRT talks about, since all it is U.S. history. He's pretty conservative. He thinks, the environmental stuff we're doing is too much. Montgomery County voters, believe strongly we need to do more to protect the environment. They believe that, we need to deal with racial inequities in the county. These are topics that we've tackled. And, we know that there's general support for. He is way outside the mainstream on this. He's not even close to the mainstream on this.
Hmm. I want to talk to you about public safety. As you know, Prince George's County has finished its first weekend after County Executive Angela Alsobrooks instituted a teen curfew. August was really rough for Prince George's County when it comes to homicides. We do know that carjackings have been up in Prince George's County, but this is nothing, nothing new. They're up in D.C., they're up in Virginia, and obviously Montgomery County has had its own issues with carjacking. So this stuff doesn't stop at the border. Your thoughts about the possibility of a curfew? I mean, is that something that you would consider? And how would you characterize youth violence in Montgomery County?
There's more of it than any of us would like, and that's for sure. But it's also not at a level. You know, we obviously have very different crime numbers than some of the other jurisdictions that have, you know, have more severe problems with it than we do. You know, we've had our first murder in about 3 months. So things have kind of tamped down. We had issues in Silver Spring. We increased our presence and our activities in Silver Spring. We've been able to bring the crime numbers down there. So I think, you know, for all of us, you know, there's no good level of crime. There are only bad levels of crime. But I think, you know, we're at least at this point in a place that doesn't make me think that I would be putting curfews on people.
And so you're saying you would not? I'm sorry, you kind of broke up. You said you would not?
I'm not thinking about doing it at this point. And I'm saying, you know, with car, you know, hijacking, you know, people get carjacked at any time of day.
Mm-hmm.
Not exclusive to the evening. So, you know, in fact, a lot of crime is not exclusive to the evening. I think it was my parents used to say, or I guess as I used to say to them, I can do anything before 11 o'clock that I can do, or anything after 11 that I can do before 11. So are you giving me a curfew? You know, in reality, and you know, crime doesn't have a time of day. It is there and it's present. And if somebody wants to do something, they find opportunities to do it. And we just try to get better of better being able to deal with it, being able to. We did a lot of work in the community this summer. We put a lot of money into youth programs. Worked with our street outreach network. We did a lot of stuff to try to tamp it down and to give youth more things to do. And as we think about what we're going to do next year, you know, we're talking about what we can do to go further in terms of, you know, providing youth with meaningful activities so that they're not left to their own devices as much as they are.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich about all things Montgomery County. Lines are open if you have a comment for the county executive. I want to continue along that same vein. What do you think the issue is regarding youth violence? Why do we see these kinds of things increasing? The you know, the ghost guns and the carjackings and the other kinds of problems that we've seen with, you know, with young people. I know a lot of people want to blame the pandemic, but youth crime didn't start there.
I mean, I wouldn't blame the pandemic. Pandemic didn't create anything that wasn't already there to some degree. I mean, I think the pandemic created the increased social isolation. People seem to, and it's hard to believe, but people seem to have forgotten or not grown up the way they should have for a year or two in terms of interpersonal relationships. I think at the end of the day, this all comes back to, you know, America's lingering and enduring racism and the fact that people live two different lives in this country, and they live in many parts of the county two different lives, in many parts of this region they live two different lives. And I taught elementary school, and it was really hard to be in a group, in a class with fifth to sixth graders and have them talk to you about how they don't think they're going to grow up. They don't think about their prospects for what they could be when they grow up. And I think about when I was a kid, to me, anything in the world was imaginable. To some of the kids I taught, nothing in the world was imaginable. If you can't think of any good choices, then in fact, there are no bad choices. I read an article about depression and poverty, and it talked about how people will try to, you know, come up with a solution. How do I get out of this mess I'm in? And, you know, so I need to go to school. And then, well, how am I going to pay the rent? Where am I going to work? Who's going to watch my kids? How much does child care cost? They talk about how people often try to think their way out of it and realize there's nothing they can do that's going to get them out of it. And at the point you decide there's nothing you can do that's going to help you escape this, then you really have no bad decisions, because you can't make a good decision. I I took that article pretty seriously, and I had, you know, my own experiences to kind of reflect on that and to think about, you know, why my kids felt the way they did. But it's like, if you're struggling in school, you know you're struggling in school, and you probably know what the consequences are going to be for that later on. You know, the worst things are when kids begin thinking I'm stupid and I'm worthless because I can't do this, which is one of the worst things that happens, you know, to a kid. And then at that point, you don't have really good choices to make. Yeah. So I really feel like, you know, we have got to, at some point, have more frank discussions about racism, have more frank discussions about how it impacts people's lives, how it impacts people's prospects, and not just, you know, point the civil rights legislation or a black president and say, see, everything's fixed. Okay. But everything is not fixed. Very little is fixed.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to the Montgomery County Executive, Mark Eldridge. Big J from Germantown, I know you're on the line. We're going to talk to you next. But I need to take a quick break. But don't forget, you can hear every edition of the Daily Drum Insight segment via podcast on WHUR.com, or you can download the 96.3 HD2 app on your smartphone and hear the program live in its entirety. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. I'm Harold Fisher. John Mons is next with the original Quiet Storm on WHUR. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we're talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Eldridge about all things Montgomery County. Lines are open, and they're open until right before 8 o'clock at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to Big J calling from Germantown. Big J, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yeah, good evening, executive. Thank you to give me a chance to talk today. We still have a problem in Montgomery County with a police problem. Because when you are black and something happen or somebody attack you or something happened to you and you call police, and finally police want to take advantage on you and try to scare you. Sometimes they treat you, they say that we arrest you if you don't listen to them. But it's you who call police for help. But finally, police turn on you. Well, how we can deal with that one in Montgomery County?
Look, I think if you've got an issue with the police, I mean, the first thing you do is, you know, file a complaint with the department. If somebody threatens you on the phone or threatens you in person, you should file a complaint. You really should. Because nothing gets addressed unless people are willing to speak up and say, this happened to me. We're also going to be having, we have a new committee that's going to be looking at complaints against police officers to see how they're handled. And, you know, we're beginning to, we've actually constituted the committee now, and they're going to begin to hear cases. And I think you can actually, you know, bring a complaint there, at least to have it investigated. I'm not sure whether you actually have to have something that's a legal document from the police that you're complaining about, but I would, you know, start by going to the police. You could talk to the Human Rights Commission and put a complaint over there. Like I said, the only way this changes is when people raise the complaint issue. If you know the officer, if you talk to an officer, get their name. If they won't give you the name, that's something you put in a report to the police department, because they're supposed to tell you who they are. I don't have a magical solution. We're going to be retraining our officers. We've got this, you know, pretty large report that's going to involve retraining the way we do some of our policing, undoing some practices that, you know, we think are not best practices. That's my suggestion for the moment.
Okay, Big J, thank you so much for your phone call. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're talking to Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich. I want to talk about this rent control legislation. When I first began, hearing and reading about it, and the concern that Montgomery County continues to be an expensive place to live, particularly if you're renting. But I remember this being an issue all the way back in 1991. I remember covering this issue in Tacoma Park. I remember the ongoing protests. It just seems to me that this is an issue that isn't going away. Can you kind of give me the cliff notes about this legislation and what might it do if the council approves it?
Well, first place, I'm glad you remember back to Tacoma Park, because I first got involved in Tacoma Park. I got elected to the council there in 1987. I led the strengthening of the city's rent stabilization law, which made it a lot stronger than it was when I got elected to office. I'm a big believer in it. It helps stabilize the community. There's less mobility in Tacoma Park. It means kids tend to stay in the same school for a longer period of time, which is, most educators will tell you, is a good thing for children to have stability, and it's a good thing for families to have stability in neighborhoods. So I think there are a lot of good things about rent stabilization. The council was operating under a series of rent stabilization bills that were temporary in nature. They lasted a year or 6 months, and the last one expired a couple months ago. And I put in a proposal to extend it. I raised the rent increases from very little to 4.4%, which is still not full inflation, probably. But we wanted to try to continue to protect people. This has been a long problem in Montgomery County, and this is not new. And we have watched affordable housing vanish in Montgomery County. In 2000, there's a report from Park and Planning says we had 45,000 naturally occurring affordable units. That means they weren't under rent stabilization or any other controls. They were just affordable because the landlord didn't raise the rents too high. 20 years later, by 2020, we only had about 22 or 23,000 left. Park and Planning previously projected we'll lose 11,000 by 2030. Given the rent increases that people are seeing now, we'll probably lose that sooner than 2030. We could easily see almost all of our, naturally occurring housing disappear. And people refuse to do anything about it. I've proposed rent stabilization. I was on the council. I proposed two bills. Circulated them to the council, never got a single council member who'd even sit down and talk about it, let alone anybody who'd agree to second it if I were actually to try to get it introduced. It's a real problem, and I don't know what world people live in when they don't see what's happening to families in this county and the ability of people to stay, to be able to afford housing. And then I think, people need to understand, if people are driven to the point they're spending 50-60% of their income on housing, and if these are folks earning $30,000 to $50,000 in income, that there's not enough left over for food, medicine, clothing, all the things you need to support a family. So I think, we've let things get way out of hand. Our moderately priced dwelling unit program, which everybody beats their chest about and says, oh, first in the nation, really bold housing program. I have 6,700 units left out of a 50-year program, 6,700 rental units. Most of them got lost because they only had 10 or 20-year projections. Anything after 20 that was built after 2005 has long-term projections, but anything that was built before 2005 had either the 10 or the 20-year restrictions on them. So a lot of the housing we protected was only temporary. Now it's gone. We've got a more diverse county than we had when that bill was passed. When they did the moderately priced dwelling unit bill, the county was 95% white. and the bill was aimed at teachers, firefighters, and police officers were considered to be the people who couldn't find housing in Montgomery County. Well, today the county is very different. The job profiles are very different. Teachers and firefighters are not the lowest paid workers in the county. It's, you know, your restaurant workers, your clerks in the stores, a lot of the, you know, manual labor that gets done around here is not done by all paid people.
But if I may interrupt
yeah.
you, you know, this, you know, Will Jawando, Councilmember Will Jawando was at a protest early last week. But this, at least right now, doesn't have the kind of support that's needed to pass. And with that being the case, you know, it's my understanding that, you know, council members other than Jawando are in favor of maybe something temporary, but nothing permanent like Tacoma Park has. Have you had any conversations with Council President Albernaz or any other council member who does not support this legislation?
I don't expect it to pass this council. I think, you know, they knew there was a deadline on their action. They decided not to protect renters, even knowing what size rent increases were occurring. So this council, you know, if they act and extend it temporarily, that would be great. I'm not holding my breath, but we've got a new council with six more members on it. I already know members who are sympathetic to rent stabilization. We're going to work with people that come up with a bill that can get as many votes as possible and have a discussion about it. I think, you know, people've got to be honest about what's happening here. And, you know, I don't know how people think this is okay. And I don't know why, you know, one group of people are allowed to get whatever return they want on investment, and that somehow is sacred, and whether that right to that rate of return makes it impossible for people to live here, apparently there's no concern to them. And it's a concern to me. And I think, you know, it's a constitutional thing to do. It was held up by the Supreme Court up after World War II. Markets do not work very well for housing because they, you know, you can't argue there's no demand for affordable housing, but nobody's building it. Obviously, the market's not responding to demand. So we need to do some things to try to make sure we don't, you know, really negatively impact this population. And I hope the business community ponders this, because if people really can't live here, they're going to have an even harder time drawing a workforce here.
So let me ask you about this, because as we know, and we can use the District of Columbia, you know, as an example, even though Mayor Bowser is constantly trying to address affordable housing in D.C., but, you know, on this program years ago, she said that landlords, big or small, will charge what the market will bear. And it could be argued that if family A cannot afford to live in Silver Spring, or if they can't afford to live in Rockville or some other place that, you know, that feeds into the job market in the District of Columbia, it could be argued that somebody will pay for it, because apartments are still being built in the county. So, you know, what's your argument? For the capitalists who say, if you don't, somebody else will.
I mean, that's, you know, I'm going to get myself in too much trouble. this is the view of people who don't feel any sense of social responsibility. That the only thing that matters is my getting the return on my investment that I want. It'd be like you and me walking into a bank and thinking like we could demand we want 10% annual interest instead of 0.75% annual interest. I mean, some people in society get to dictate their rates of return. Other people in society get told what their rate of return is going to be. So I'm, you know, unsympathetic to that argument. If that's the view people really have, and it doesn't matter to them, then they really do need to think about the long-term consequences. First place, in Montgomery County, one of the problems is that because jobs have been relatively stagnant here, there's a lot of housing that we've already approved. We've approved 35,000 housing units that could be built tomorrow, and they're not being built. And they're not being built because we do not have people with the wages, and the developers have said this. People, the rents they want are more than what people can afford to pay. Somebody might get kicked out of one of these more affordable units, and somebody else might move in. But unless they're coming from out of the county, they're just leaving one apartment empty to go to another apartment, and the people who get booted out of the first apartment most likely aren't going to be able to get into the second apartment. I don't know what, I mean, are people going to be okay if all the housing is overcrowded? If I have two families in every one-bedroom or two-bedroom apartment, if, you know, people turn houses into, you know, multifamily, family per bedroom. I mean, all this stuff happens in some places, and it's happened here before. So it could happen again. I don't really want to go there. And I really, you know, don't understand how people don't get what those kind of living conditions are going to do to the families and how those kids get raised and how people come to look at the world. It's not a healthy social view.
Yeah.
Maybe great for your pocket, but if you've got any social conscience, it's kind of bankrupt.
Let me talk about some health-related issues. Obviously, we've not heard a lot over the past several weeks because some other kinds of stories have taken over the headlines. And most recently, all of the election regarding the passing of Queen Elizabeth II. But the reality is that COVID-19 is still an issue. There's the monkeypox issue. Let me start with monkeypox. Does the county have the access and the logistics to addressing the monkeypox issue squared away?
I would say at this point, yes. They made a change in how the vaccines are administered in terms of the dosage. What they determined was a proper dosage, and so that's allowed us to take our supply and and vaccinate far more people. We had a waiting list of 3,500 people waiting to get vaccinated. We're working our way through that list. I don't know if we've completed it yet or not, but if we have the ability to vaccinate a lot more people, and we're continuing to do that. We're doing another televised forum this week to the Hispanic community to talk to them about monkeypox and provide some education. So I feel that, you know, we're providing the public information and we have the ability to deal with the vaccines at this point. I won't say we could originally, but since they changed the dosage requirements, it's made it much more possible. We've ordered more vaccine. I'd say as long as we keep getting a supply of vaccine, we should be okay.
What are your COVID concerns as the weather starts to turn cooler as we move into fall and eventually winter?
It's going to be interesting. I mean, it's hard to say what for sure we think is going to happen. I don't know what for sure is going to happen because COVID keeps mutating. But, you know, this new vaccine that addresses both the original COVID and the Omicron variants, that could provide a real break in the sense that it would give people very similar protection that they had against the original, which is what you didn't get sick, not like you got sick and had a mild case. So we're hoping that something targeted on Omicron basically can provide that kind of protection. I guess everybody's hoping this thing doesn't mutate into something nastier than it is today, but there's no guarantee on that. I think we all have seen enough to know that anything is possible. But I'm hoping that we kind of stay in the bounds that we are. I'm, you know, optimistic that eventually they will produce a one-year vaccine that's good for a year. I think one of the things I think disheartens some people or confuses people is they're used to an annual flu vaccine, And so we think of vaccines we get once in our life, once every 5 years, maybe once a year. We don't think of the vaccine as something we get every 4 months. And I think that makes people have less confidence than they should have. But I do think that, you know, this new vaccine and some of the new advances that are being made in terms of treatment may render this thing much, much more like a cold, if not in the next 6 months, certainly within the next, you know, year or two. We ought to be able to look at this as something that can be easily treated if you get it, and with effective vaccines that are more protective. I don't anticipate, you know, us going back on restriction right now, as long as people don't get seriously ill. I mean, if we were filling our hospitals with seriously ill people, we'd be looking at, you know, being more protective. But right now, you know, those people, if they get it, they get a mild case, they don't wind up in a hospital, and they're not putting our hospital system in jeopardy of being able to take care of other sick people. So as long as we manage this balance, we're probably okay.
I want to talk to you again about traffic safety. I remember I believe several interviews ago, we spoke about this, and it's ironic. You talk about some of the issues that are more prominent, say, for example, in Prince George's County, and then you have issues that are prominent in Montgomery County. We had the bicyclist, Sarah Langenkamp. She was killed last month when she was cycling. There was the cycling demonstration that we saw over the Labor Day weekend. And now, you know, there's a call for more, you know, for more bike lanes. I think that's the first thing. Obviously, first day of school, had a child hit. Overall, first, why do you think Montgomery County seems to be challenged as relates to road safety?
I think safety and pedestrian safety is a lot bigger than just a Montgomery County issue. We're not unusual in the increase in accidents, which is, you know, to stress people, not just in Montgomery County, but around the country. I think drivers, for reasons I do not understand, are driving much worse than before. I see people doing stuff that I never saw people do. I've seen people drive in the opposite, going the wrong way down a two-way street to avoid a stoplight so they can get into a turning lane that's way up ahead of them. People just seem not to be driving the way they were driving before, driving worse than were than they were before. I think the bicyclist issue, I mean, this, what happened to the woman was really tragic. You keep trying to replay in yourself what you could do. And even if there had been a bike lane, at the point she crossed the driveway, you're not going to be in a protected bike lane. What you need is a driver who looked in the rearview mirror and saw the car. Now, I did some research, and I found that there are these mirrors for trucks that are actually cameras. And you can put it on that side of the car and replace the mirror with the camera. And it gives a really good view of what's beside the truck as well as what's behind the truck. And I will talk to some people in the legislature about offering, you know, legislation that would require trucks to replace the passenger side mirror with one of these better camera mirrors. It's clearly a better image than you're going to get out of, than you get just out of looking at your mirror. And I think, you know, that may be a technical thing that you want to do, because if people are going to use bike lanes more and more, then maybe the traditional, you know, side view mirror doesn't give you a safe enough view or a complete enough view for a driver to make some of their turning decisions safely. But, you know, that would be a technological solution, but it's not overly expensive, and it seems to me something that would improve a person's visibility. But other than that, it's just frustrating, the fact that people just are not behaving well, in my opinion.
Well, I would agree. I would agree with that. Certainly not just in Montgomery County, but, you know, everywhere. I will say that some of the things that I saw just over the course of this past weekend in my community in, you know, Baltimore just shocked me. I mean, just peeling off from a standing start when a light turns green and the weaving in and out. And, you know, you see, again, a lot of this on, you know, on the highways and the like. So I would agree that there is a lot of that. But as it pertains to the county, do you believe that to protect children, there needs to be an even stronger emphasis on traffic calming, stiffer penalties for school zone violations or
yes.
and the like?
All of the above. I mean, I'm a big believer in fact, I was inspired by what I saw in D.C. before I became executive. I noticed D.C. was putting in all of these bollards, those plastic bollards, and squaring off corners and delineating bike areas and crossing areas. And I've had my people start to do that in Montgomery County. I basically said, you know, this is low cost. It's effective. It squares the corner. It forces cars to turn down. It delineates very clearly areas where you might be expecting to see a pedestrian, as well as giving a pedestrian a kind of sheltered place to stand in. So I want to do as much of that stuff as we can possibly do. I mean, I have no qualms about slowing down cars, making them, you know, go slower. I think some of the speed limits we have are too high, given the amount of traffic and the amount of pedestrian and other activities we have. So I'm comfortable with all of that and with more strict enforcement. Now, you know, it kills me to watch people, as you said, peeling off, people driving at speeds that are just insane. And some of these motorcyclists, too, are driving in ways that are beyond insane. I mean, all somebody has to do is make the slightest mistake, you know, not see somebody coming up on them and then start to turn and wind up with a motorcycle on your side door. There's too much craziness out there.
And to that point, and I will, as a person who enjoys driving and must drive, but also someone who enjoys having a, you know, a bicycle, I must say that, and I'm speaking specifically in my community in Baltimore, the plastic pylons that separate bike lanes from vehicles, four-wheel vehicles and the like, are a little concerning to not just, you know, myself, because there are so many of them. At times you don't know where you're going, how to get around them, and the like. And I think that you may know what I'm talking about. They're about 3 feet tall and they're flexible and the like. But is that a possible solution for bike lanes?
You know, are bike lanes a solution?
Yeah, well, I'm talking about those little plastic pylons. There's got to be a way, because, as you said, people are going to continue to ride bikes. Go ahead.
That's what I've asked them to do, is to use more of the pylons to separate bike paths from other people. But I think we've got to think, you know, about where we put our bike paths. You know, it does not help. You create situations where, you know, the loss of a lane is going to, you know, slow everything to a near halt, because all you can do is get frustrated drivers who are then going to proceed to do other things they shouldn't do. I think we need to place our bike lanes well, but we need to, there's no reason why we shouldn't be able to protect bike lanes.
Yeah. Finally, I have a few minutes left, and I do want to go back to politics. And, you know, we saw that Democrat Wes Moore won decisively in the primary for governor of Maryland. The Governor Hogan has decided not to endorse Dan Cox. He is never the Republican. He has never had anything really positive to say about the Republican. You and, first of all, the governor have often been at odds politically. Any chance that you and Governor Hogan could politically bury the hatchet, as you, even though he is not openly supporting Wes Moore, do you see anything that you two could see, eye to eye with during these last few months of his term?
So I think, you know, people have a pretty distorted view of my relationship with the governor. I mean, there's no doubt that...
Well, please set the record straight.
We disagreed on some things. Immigration, he wasn't very happy about our view of how we were handling immigration. He's not very happy about 495 and 270. But I will say we've been able pretty consistently to work with the governor and his staff in particular on a number of things that are important to us. He gave us money right at the end of the legislative session to go into the effort we're making in White Flint in order to reimagine White Flint and to get the necessary project done as part of our looking at how we redevelop that place. His door has not been closed. His staff has worked with us. They've worked with us on housing projects. I have always given him credit for disagreeing and sometimes being more disagreeable and disagreeing than I'd like. But at the same time, he hasn't carried that over to a general, we're not going to work with you attitude. Mm-hmm. So I've actually found that, you know, despite our disagreements, we're able to talk with each other and we're able to get other things done.
Well, real quick, let me ask you in these next 30 seconds, if Wes Moore wins, what might you expect from him for Montgomery County?
I think he's going to look really seriously at some of the economic development opportunities we have. We're poised to do a couple of what I think are major steps toward attracting and building a life science center right now, which is like we're number four in the country. We have no reason to believe we couldn't be number one or number two, given the way things are moving. And I think he's going to recognize the opportunities we have, but also that to actually achieve these possibilities, we're going to need some state aid, particularly for transportation.
Yeah.
He gets it. And I'm optimistic we're going to make progress with him.
Well, I appreciate your time. Montgomery County Executive Mark Elrich, good luck to you as the summer comes to a close, and hopefully we will see some improvements in youth crime and crime overall in the county. Thank you so much for your time, sir.
Hey, thank you very much.
All right. That is the Daily Drum for this Monday, September 12th. I'm Harold Fisher. Good night.